The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
They stenciled their drum heads and guitars with their names. And this was how Cyrus got sent to the school where they told him he'd never be famous. And this was why Jeff, in the letters he'd write to his friend, helped develop a plan to get even. When you punish a person for dreaming his dream, don't expect him to thank or forgive you. The best ever death metal band out of Denton.
Hey everybody, welcome to Reporting is Eligible. I'm Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express. And we just finished making the playoffs and beating the Bears, and all is right with the world, and it's all good down here in Chicago. The Bears don't know what to do with themselves, and so may even ruin themselves for the foreseeable future. There's nothing to be sad about. It's just fantastic. So first, to help us revel in the joy that game was, you appear to be in Kansahoma at the moment. Am I?
Yes, I am.
All right.
My name is Matt, but you can call me Matt. Matthew Packing, Company Meme Weaver, and general Twitter rabble rouser. I have plenty to be sad about. Today was awful for me specifically.
Oh, yeah, so. Like in terms of life, personal living. Yeah, that's a different story.
Colorado and Kansas got hit with a horrifying blizzard yesterday. I was supposed to come to Kansas yesterday, but the National Weather Service said you will die if you don't bring a survival kit. So I didn't go until today, but half the roads were closed. And I high-centered my rental car twice.
Jeez, literally had to
dig myself out with a ice scraper.
Well, we're glad Matt's alive. Also, helping us out, we have a special guest this week, a actual patron of ours. But Tim, I'll let you introduce yourself and plug your own podcast.
Hey, I'm Tim Brown. Unlike what JR usually says,
yeah, we've never mispronounced your name correctly once. I don't think
ever. A long-time listener, one-time contest winner. But I usually do a podcast for Tech Hockey Guide called Chasing McNaughton, covering mainly college hockey, if anybody cares to listen. So
yeah,
go Huskies.
I like college hockey. I am a Badger fan. I used to have season tickets in college. I caught a puck that was headed for my wife's face, and I still have that on my desk somewhere, buried under video games. Tim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Yeah, you were the contest winner. You got to go to the game, 2 weeks ago? Is that right?
The Chiefs game.
Chiefs? Oh, that was, jeez, time flies.
Yeah.
That was so long ago.
Oh,
man, I can't believe that was that long ago. All right.
Yep.
Thanks for being here. And I think we could just, there's not much negative to talk about. The only thing that was really negative about that game was all sort of tangential things that slowed it down and weird things that made them not score, but everybody was good, especially all the young guys on offense and defense. And I think best place is probably just start with Love. He had 5 incompletions the whole game. He was essentially great in all possible scenarios. Under pressure, he was 3 of 3. He was 5 of 5 when blitzed. He was 8 for 8 off play action, and 8 of those throws were 10 yards plus. Zach Cruz tweeted out all these splits, by the way. You should follow him if you don't already, of course. And spread it around to every conceivable receiver. Romeo is the only one who didn't really have a catch because he hurt himself on his first opportunity. But literally everybody else on the team had a catch, and most of them had 3. It was great.
So I was watching at Trinity, and the owner, Matt, comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, what happened to Romeo?" And I was like, I heard he was spitting up blood, so I'm pretty sure he's not coming back.
Yeah. I think he... Do we know? Do we actually have an injury report on him? I haven't seen...
Chest.
A chest. Okay. So a broken rib probably, right? That's...
I don't know. There's a lot of things that can make you cough blood.
They did say he went to the hospital, right?
So then that might be punctured lung.
Oh, yeah. That could be punctured lung then. Yeah. If he went to the hospital, that's not good. But, you know, Romeo is a perfectly good receiver. The good thing about the Packers is they're just so deep at receiver now. Bo Melton had another great game. That's two in a row. Like 61 yards receiving, I think, but also a couple nice runs. A really powerful run to pick up a first down. I think that was a jet sweep where he like plowed over five Bears.
Yes.
That was phenomenal.
It might have been an end around. I can't remember.
Yeah, whatever.
The exact semantics of the play.
It's so complicated with the Packers because sometimes it's a handoff and sometimes it's a little pop pass and who cares? Like, I know the stats. The stats care.
I care. Because that one time that I had too many bourbons and you and I argued over Reed having carries or catches.
Yeah. Luke Musgrave had a catch. A pretty important one, too. And I don't, like, it was just pure and utter domination despite being a 17-9 game or whatever it ended up being.
Yeah, it was. So it was you and I that was talking to Bukowski, right?
Yes.
Where he was like, this was so much further apart than the scoreboard says. He's like, this is like the 1% of outcomes. And yeah. I was like, yeah, you have to populate the end of the bell curve. Like, sometimes you have to.
You do. I actually looked it up. That's how I got in that conversation with Buko. It's the only game in NFL history where a team scored 17 points with one or fewer turnovers without punting. It's never
the only one.
And yeah. They won, yes. They were only...
Why do we even pay that Irish guy?
But
it's nice to not have to use him in a game in January.
It is, isn't it? It's crazy that they didn't punt. It's absolutely insane. It was also, there were two super fast games. The Carolina game was also over in 240. That game in the earliest window, it mattered for the Packers had they lost. That's one where Carolina, we needed an upset from them, possibly. And I actually missed that it didn't happen for a long time because I was checking scores and it wasn't there because it was at the bottom because it ended like instantly.
Half of the Titans game or half of the fourth quarter for the Titans game was left when that game was.
It was crazy.
But it was crazy. A lot of the games were really fast this week, period. Like, and I saw a tweet. Somebody was like, it's amazing how fast the games can be when only half the teams playing care.
And the refs, too. I think a lot of refs were checked out this weekend, too. The Packer game, the refs didn't really... No, that's not true. They almost did determine it, actually. But it was a rare, bad officiating game where nothing gets called.
Did you see the ball placement on the Packers' halftime drive?
I did not.
Okay, so the ball was supposed to be placed on the 49-yard line, and the ref placed it on the Bears' 49, and then he ran away and then ran back and then put it on the Packers 49, and then ran away again. It cost the Packers like 6 seconds.
No, so I did not see that.
He actually put it at the 50 first, and then somebody must have told him it's supposed to be on the 49, and he put it on the wrong one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that cost 5 or 6 seconds, and it is actually would have been enough for them to spike it after the Wicks.
Oh, man. That play, I think, was correctly called, but it was still infuriating because of the Chiefs game. I hate ref hypocrisy. And it's annoying because it just pops to your mind instantly. Like, hey, we didn't get that call the last time it happened. Come on. The refs were bad. Didn't cost us, but, you know, definitely kept the Bears in the game. And I don't think the NFL is above... especially selective video releases and the drop by DJ Moore that was overturned, or I guess it wasn't overturned. They called it.
It was confirmed.
It was confirmed. If you go to NFL Plus, which has the official game replays, that replay is not there. It is cut out of the game. It just goes to the next play instantly, right when he's about to cradle the ball in. You cannot get a high.
You mean, You mean when the ball falls out of his hand, hits the ground, and then bounces back up into his face?
It's cut before that, actually.
The definitive thing that shows that the ball hit the ground and he didn't actually maintain the process of the catch?
It is not there. They have not put it back. I went to see if they'd put it back when they posted all 22. They did not do that. Yep. So that's
it's so
fun.
Weird the way that went down, that they were like, oh, this is going to get reviewed. They immediately went to commercial, showed us like two quick replays, and then came back and were like, the call stands.
Yeah.
And they didn't dig into it at all like they normally do, didn't talk to their resident official or whatever, any of that. And they just let it stand and acted like no big deal.
Yeah, and no questions about that one after the fact either. Just a bizarre bit of circumstances. That and the chain measurement thing too, like where he didn't even bend down to look at it, and like they just gave
that him. Happened twice on Sunday, because it happened in the Vikings game too, and then it almost happened in the Dolphins Bills game. The same thing happened, but they actually called it not a first down in that game.
So, all right, let's
Do you guys want to hear my conspiracy theory about that game?
Yes.
So I was originally not supposed to get the Packers Bears game, and CBS was going to show the Kansas City. Was it Chargers?
I have no idea who they played.
Yeah, so it was you know, backups versus backups, right? CBS flexed the Packers game to a much larger audience than was originally going to get it. A couple hours before kickoff,
probably once they saw the inactives for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I think they wanted to keep the game interesting for the now larger audience.
Maybe.
Because if DJ Moore doesn't make that catch, and if the refs don't screw up the other times, the Packers win 30-3.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. And it is weird to not have any penalties. There was one, I think. It was like a false start or something. That's right, right? Yep. One penalty.
First
penalty
was on Gary.
Yeah.
One penalty.
Yeah,
for
it was
five.
Offside.
Yes, they even got that wrong, right? That was a false start that they botched, right?
Yeah, the left tackle false started, and they missed it because Gary rushed on the other side.
Yes. Gary also moved first, but he did not enter the neutral zone until the left tackle had already started moving. So, like, it should have been a false start.
All right.
But you know what? We sound like Bears fans complaining about the refs. We won. Who cares?
We overcame. So that's why we can be, I think, a little confident that we're actually a good team. You know, when you're sort of an averagey team and you have games like this, they tend to be those like kind of coin flip one score games that you lose. And instead, we like still just beat the tar out of them despite having quite a lot go against us. So I'm actually kind of pumped for this one. Like, yeah, we should have won 40-6 or whatever, but the fact that they were still not really in any danger despite having quite a lot go against them. Like now I'm like overly confident. Now I'm like, we can take on the world. This is great.
Do you know what the spread was?
2.5, right?
Yeah, it opened at 3, ended at 2.5. So that means that the line moved in the Bears' favor.
It did. It moved in the Bears' favor.
And the Packers beat the Bears by 8 and the refs by 13.
The narrative down here on the Bears was totally all about the trenches and that, oh, you can't really hold this against Justin Fields, that he couldn't get any blocking all day, like he was under pressure the whole time. And same thing on defense, or you know, that they just they couldn't get any pressure on Jordan, and so you can't really blame anything there either. Just they're in total denial about Fields, at least on the radio and in the news media.
Well, my favorite part about Receipt Monday was how people were pulling receipts on the Bears upgraded their offensive line so much this offseason.
Yeah, and they did. Like, it's just that they were one of the worst ever to, you know, just normal bad. And that's what they got. We should talk.
Anytime you can quit being generationally bad is an improvement.
Yeah. I also think we're spending a little more time on just all the rookies that just kicked ass in this game. Because if you listen to the mini pod last week, we mentioned the Bears' biggest weakness is slot receivers. Jaden Reed, four catches, four targets, 112 yards, two giant catches, absolutely torched them. And Dontayvion Wicks had a two touchdown game. So we got, and Tucker Kraft also, 3 for 31 doesn't look good, but two of those were long third down conversions for first downs. And he just mauls people. He's fun too. All the rookies were great. And then on defense, the rookies were great too, especially Carl Brooks, who just ate up that interior. I'm so happy that he and Clark like played this game together. They were so good.
But also, Was it Wooden like playing edge at times?
I think he got in a couple snaps. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I think Enagbare had a splash play. Where the heck has he been for the last?
Yeah, I'm always surprised when he's on the field now, but he definitely got on there for one. I thought Van Ness was excellent. He started the game at edge, and he immediately like didn't lose contain on fields like four times in a row, and like just pushed his guy like to the back of to field's back shoulder, always keeping him so that he had to step up into him. It was like a thing of beauty.
And Wyatt also just absolutely massacred Fields on a blindside hit. That was cool.
It was cool.
You know what was not cool about that play?
What's that?
Devondre Campbell with a 4-yard head start got stonewalled by a rookie running back.
That was annoying. He had a bad game. That he is not good.
He has. It's now the olds, man.
Now that Eric Stokes is gone, I want him gone too. He's a liability. Carrington Valentine also had like the best pass breakup of the game, although he did get torched at first, but had the speed to make up for it.
Should have caught it.
Should it was a little awkward. Yeah, should have definitely caught it. Right in the numbers.
So a very drunken Tony Romo goes, "This play should have either been a touchdown or an interception. What happened?"
I do still like Romo, although
I thought I was the only person that actually likes Romo. But
I miss hyper analytic Romo, when he used to like call things in advance and stuff like that. Drunk Romo is fun, but not as fun.
Yeah, well, Romo is, word on the street is he's 6 Coronas deep before halftime.
Oh yeah, I mean it's not hard to tell. It's out there for you. I don't know. Anything else to praise on the Bears game? I just feel like it was a party the whole time. I loved it.
I really liked how they used Quay a lot, kind of as the spy, yet kind of doing like a run rush, but keeping contained.
He was good. I actually watched some Quay today. He was very disciplined in sticking with Fields, yeah, not letting him get away and outside. And haven't seen that in a while. That was a very, very good Quay. Usually Quay's kind of flying all over the place. He is famous for getting himself out of position, and he did not do that at all this game. So, yeah, he was excellent too. All the young guys up front, not just the rookies, I'd say, were good. Gary's getting surpassed a little bit.
What is the giggle?
It's just funny, that's all.
Guy gets paid and then suddenly isn't good. That's not like that's ever happened before, right?
Oh, yeah, never at all. Did he get one in this game? He didn't, right? He got shut out. Nope. Quay got one, Carl got one, Kenny got one, Van Ness got one, and Devontae Wyatt got one. That's it.
Kenny Clark's over-under for sacks this game was 0.25. And I was like, oh, he at least got a half sack. And then they showed the replay, and I was like, oh, that was only Kenny.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
It was. All right. Shall we talk about next week and Mike a little bit? Because
oh, yeah. Well, it's like anything, Paul.
It is. It's football. I read all your mic stuff, which was great, but
okay. The comment section did not appreciate my
dude
McCarthy.
You can't write for the comment section.
But yeah, like I said, Christian Watson has a hamstring, and people are like, "Yeah, he's got two of them. What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Come on, man."
Comment sections are weird. Like, I'm always surprised there's anybody in there now. I guess it's probably better than being on Twitter, though. So, who am I to throw stones? So Dallas is good, but not unbeatable. They've had a few stinkers this year, and they actually haven't been very good down the stretch. They've only put up major points against some of the trashest defenses in the league. I believe the last game, on Sunday they played Washington, right? They lit them up pretty good. But Washington is an absolute trash fire on defense. One of the worst defensive teams in the league. That doesn't count.
I'm going to put a lot of faith in your analysis here.
Okay.
Because you said that all the Bears have been quote unquote like good on paper. They've only been good against really bad teams, and that showed itself this week. So I'm putting a lot of faith in this.
They were good against the Lions too, and I think that's probably a halfway decent comp because the Lions they lost to the Cowboys, of course, in the Decker game, 20-19. That was only a 20-point game against a bad Lion defense 2 weeks ago, and the Cowboys put up 20 on the Dolphins of the week before that. Again, not a great game. And they lit up some teams before that, but it was the Eagles, who are awful on defense, as it turns out, the Seahawks, who are even awfuler on defense, and Washington again. So I think there's a little bit of fraudulence there. I also think the Bears would have been a lot better in this game had they had Jalen Johnson. I think that hurt them horribly. Just to go back to that a little bit. The Bears tried to blitz Jordan Love early to get pressure on him, but Jordan, being the cool customer that he is, read it and went right after Jalen Johnson's backup. And they basically stopped blitzing after that. And, you know, that's a huge weakness for them. It's a huge downgrade. He's their best defensive player. So the Bear defense was not good in that game, but they were missing, like, their best player. So there is that, too. You know, injuries happen, but...
Also, Jaquan Brisker was not his usual self.
He's not good. He's the worst.
Okay.
He's okay.
He was okay this year.
He's okay. He's just okay, though. But so Dallas is good kind of across the board. Their DVOA splits are pretty much all good. They're good against number one receivers. They're good against number two receivers. They're good against slot receivers. They are actually weak against tight ends. It is their big weakness on defense. But they have, as an offensive unit, they're really top-heavy and really one-dimensional. This is very much a Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams team. It really, really is. Like, CeeDee Lamb is kind of their whole offense.
Well, I would say that's more of a Jordy offense then, right?
That's fair. Although Jordy usually had another guy for the most part, right? Like either Cobb when he was still kind of in his prime.
Well, so I'm thinking that, like, was it 20? When did Jordy tear his ACL? 2015?
Yeah, I think it was 2015.
Like, that team was awful.
They were awful. The Cowboys aren't awful.
No, but I'm saying, like take out Jordy. That team was awful. Take out CeeDee Lamb, and I think the offense grinds to a halt.
That is correct. Yeah, I think that's right. He is everything to this team. Their second leading receiver is Jake Ferguson, who none of you may know this, but he's Barry Alvarez's grandson. After that, it's Brandon Cooks, who he's good. The mercenary is always not a bad guy to have, but 54 catches for 657 yards. He's not great. And then it's just a bunch of guys. So nobody scares you on that offense. Like, Dak's good. Dak's fine, but he's, you know, not one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. He's having an excellent season. CeeDee Lamb is very helpful. But I feel like Mike does turn into a pumpkin a lot in the playoffs. I think we have a pretty decent shot here. I'm feeling probably absurdly confident in this. Their defense is good. There's a lot of stars on it. But, like, our offense has been so good lately. I'm stupidly optimistic about this. I don't know. How do you guys feel about this matchup?
My vibe is we knock Dallas out of the playoffs, and then we go to San Francisco and get our teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I'm I'm predicting the next few weeks.
That's kind of how I'm feeling, and I think that's quite possible. But I kind of feel like just on our, like, the Packer offense, I feel like, is real. Like, they're actually a top five offense. And so while the Dallas defense is a very good defense, like, this is not a case of a wild card who has just snuck into the playoffs going up against a juggernaut. I think this is the Packers are fairly, like, the second half versions of themselves, where they're actually an offensive juggernaut going up against a defensive juggernaut. And that's not a sure thing at all. Now, we got Joe lingering on the other side, of course. But they've been okay-ish over the last couple weeks.
Well, you know what they did against the Bears that they don't normally do? They ran a ton of man.
They did run
so
a ton
much
of man.
Yeah. Basically, every sack came on man coverage.
Maybe there's growth. Who knows?
No, it's just we're at the point where Joe's letting the players yell at him again. Happened last year, too. Because Jair was like, run more man. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's true.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
All right. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a blast. Shall we do our many, 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 many questions?
Ike, you are not underselling the amount of questions. You people.
We set a record every week, and we did this week, which is not surprising because this is exciting. Good team playing with house money. But yeah, as always, if you want to ask a question, patrons get question priority. You can become a patron at patreon.com/mketailgate. That gets you priority on the baseball pod too, should you want that. $2 gets you question priority. $5 gets you an extra podcast, that being the mini pod that I always talk about. It also gets you an extra baseball podcast, the Minor League Extra with James Anderson of RotoWire and Ryan. So go check that out. And yeah, let's do it. Let's knock these out. Matt, would you like to be JR this episode?
But Tim's JR. Can Tim read him?
Is that what I'm here for? Okay.
You've been drafted. Let's give it a shot.
All right. We'll see how my reading skills are. I was an engineer, so I don't know. Matt Podskarby.
Oh,
I did practice all the names.
Off to a bad start.
Yep. Rank the following pass catchers from best to worst: Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Bo Melton, Malik Heath, Luke Musgrave, and Tucker Kraft.
So the whole team. All right.
I mean, Heath is last, right? Like,
I think so.
Yeah, Heath is last. I agree with that.
I go Wicks, Reed, Watson, Doubs. No, Wicks, Reed, Melton, Watson, Doubs.
Ooh.
Oh, I forgot the tight ends.
Yeah. they're on the second line all by themselves. It's easy to miss.
This is so okay. Wicks, Reed, Melton, Kraft, Doubs, Musgrave, Watson, Heath.
I think you have Watson too low, even with the injuries. But
I remember him doinking in the face like Jeff Janis. So it's
okay, fair. I agree. So I'm on board with Wicks. I'm on board with Reed second. I think that's still a little high on Melton. I will go Kraft above Melton, and I think I'll go Watson ahead of Melton too. Melton has two good games, which is good. It's better than no good games. But Watson actually has quite a few good games, and maybe we'll.
Oh, I'm doing this literally as catching of passes.
Oh,
they're pass catchers. I'm rating their catching of passes.
I was just rating them in terms of how good they are.
See, Mark, you gotta be more specific here, man.
Well, you get two different metrics then. So let's see. Watson, Melton, Doubs, Musgrave, Heath, I guess. Yeah, I guess I like that. But that, a lot of those guys are good, so that's okay. It's a good group.
I think that you have a guaranteed one and two, and then there's like a lot of minutia in the middle there.
Yeah, agreed. With a lot of different skill sets. You know, a lot of those guys do very different things. Like Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson couldn't be more different, but both have value doing various things. So, but Wicks is the best. Wicks, like, he moves like Devontae Adams. He just does, like, every single game, he is just smoking people off his release.
Did you see the side-by-side of the slant?
Yes, it's insane. It's crazy. They look the same. They look like the same guy.
We've had a lot of deja vu with this team. I mean, look how much Love looks like Favre on some throws and Rodgers on others. And yeah, it's just crazy.
Speaking of, what was with that like weird, like the almost intercepted wobbly floater? Did his arm get hit? What happened?
Oh, you know, I meant to go and look at that, and I didn't. And it sure seemed like his arm had to have gotten hit on it. But
it was the worst pass I've ever seen him throw.
Yeah, he was lucky on that one. Could have easily been picked off. Yeah,
I think the only reason I didn't go back and look more was because it wasn't picked.
Yep. All right, one down, 31 to go.
Patrick Detmer.
You got to do it with the impression here, Tim.
I'm going to try. I have four questions. Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? There.
That was really good.
It was good. can't really answer that. I guess the answer is yes. Except for the you kidding me. No, that's no.
In the pantheon of football memes, that's one, two.
Did anybody ever stitch it together with Iverson talking about practice? Is that a thing?
Yes. Okay. Specifically, the DJ Steve, what the heck was his name? He called it Press Hop. So if you go to YouTube and look up a song called Press Hop,
okay.
He made a song out of that. He also added in Ocho Cinco and T.O.
All right. Got it. I was like, that has to exist because it's so obvious. But if it doesn't, we should do it. But it does. So never mind. All right.
I guess the only thing I have to say about it is how crazy it is that we got here from where we were in like October.
It's insane. We were 3-6 and we didn't have Aaron to spell relax or any of that nonsense. So run the table. Just did it. Everybody improved. I can't believe everybody improved. This is going to be such a great season to like look back on in the future too, when we have future young teams and people say things like, oh, we need to sign a veteran receiver. Like, nope. 2023.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. Don't do that. The young teams, do you really think they're all going to come together? 2023. Dang it. It's going to be fun. I'm going to use this season for ammo forever. I love it.
All right. Jonathan Deal. I'm not someone who believes in fate or superstition, but the parallels between the start of Love's career and Rodgers, their stats, team success, and now Love is facing his predecessor's old coach and team he's owned. This seems a little too storybook to be more than coincidental. Thoughts? Sub question, where does this year rank in terms of overall enjoyment? For me, it has to be up there with 2010 and 2013.
I think this is for me, 2010 was a big roller coaster, and that's kind of what this has been. So I'll put it there.
Yeah. I think it's been super enjoyable. And yes, there was the down point, but this was always like a low stakes year. From the beginning, expectations weren't that high. So what they've achieved has been, I think, super fun. And the downsides have been mostly learning experiences. I put it super, like, this is, it's not completely there with the Super Bowl year. But, like, except for the Super Bowl, it's kind of on par. Like, I feel like we won a lot this year. Like, not just games, but, like, we just won a lot of good personnel battles and growth and development. And aside from Love's development, just there's such a strong foundation for the team. They should be good for quite a while.
Yeah, Love is that dude. Like, he really is.
That he is. But it is coincidence, yes. And it's not. So I appreciate the fate, like, framing of the question, Jonathan. But I don't like the whole, like, oh, the Packers are destined to always have good quarterbacks things and the Bears are doomed. Like, the Packers get good quarterbacks because they draft quarterbacks when people yell at them for drafting quarterbacks. And that has been the case for quite a long time now. And, you know, we point this out a lot, but when they had Favre, they also had Matt Hasselbeck and Mark Brunell and Aaron Brooks and like other guys who weren't, and they had Kurt Warner through for a cup of coffee and other guys who weren't quite as good, like Ty Detmer, but who were still pretty good. And when they had Aaron Rodgers, the year Aaron Rodgers started starting, they drafted Brian Brohm and Matt Hasselbeck. And like when they drafted Jordan Love, they got yelled at for it, even though they draft quarterbacks all the time. And that's why they find them. You can only find them if you've got a bunch of them that come through. And if Jordan Love had not worked out, they would have been in a good spot to draft another one and try again without having lost too much. But he is good. And that's how you had to do it. Like the Bears never, like, they do spend high picks on quarterbacks, but it's only when they're desperate, only when they're in huge need. It's Cade McNown and Trubisky, and Fields is a 10th. You know, he's not even a first. But a lot of the Bear quarterbacks that they bring through have been like Trevor Siemian in the 6th round or stuff like Nathan Enderle. I'm not going to name off a bunch of Bear backup quarterbacks, but it's always like afterthoughts at the end of the draft who played at schools nearby. Like, that's the difference between the two teams. So, yeah, not fate. This is good planning. This is the benefits of good planning.
Sorry, so I was looking back at the last Packers quarterback who was not drafted fairly high in terms of, like, starter. And they picked Mikowski in the 10th round.
10th round, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he still split time with Randy Wright? How bad was Randy Wright?
He was really bad. He was all, I mean, he quarterbacked some of the worst Packer teams of all time, honestly. Those 80s teams are awful.
Yikes.
All right.
So on the where does this rank for me? I think the one thing that I could add from my college hockey side is it is kind of fun being the team with no expectations and overachieving. Like that is almost, that's so much more fun than like expecting to win and winning. It's really fun being that team that just kind of comes out of nowhere and is it when you're not expecting it. And that's been the best part about this year to me.
Heck yeah. I was talking to my boss and he was like, hey, do we have a chance against Dallas? And I was like, yeah, I think we do. And then we're going to just get murdered by San Francisco. And he goes, that's okay. And then we both literally at the same time said, we're playing with house money. Like that was.
Yeah.
The...
Yeah. This is
how I had a Bear fan yelling at me on my Tech Hockey Guide Discord about stuff. And I was like, I don't care if we win this week. We made the playoffs. Like that's that we did way better than I thought we would. So yeah. It's awesome.
It's like kind of the opposite of last year where we still had Aaron and we did expect to make the playoffs and be contenders, but it was such a slog. Like it was just, expectations were just grinding down every week, and this is just the opposite. It's just such joy.
All right. Morgoth 10. Woohoo! All signs certainly look good that Jordan Love is the guy. Hopefully that continues. If you had to guess statistically speaking, what are the percentage chance of a football team does what the Packers have seemingly done, have three franchise quarterbacks in a row without any stoppages or misfires?
Well, statistically speaking, they're the first team to ever do what they've done in terms of age in the playoffs. So let's see. There's 32 teams. The league has been around for 100.
I like the Fermi estimation you got going here. This is good.
Look, man, there's going to be like I'm going to have to make a Mandelbrot set to really.
I mean, it's not. So let's. First of all, Jordan Love is not a Hall of Famer at this point, but let's assume that he is like at least close to that. Let's assume he just plays at this level for like at least 5 or 6 more years, quite likely more. It's never happened before, so the odds of it are very, very low, right? Like we've gotten 2 Hall of Famers in a row from a lot of teams. We had Montana and Young. We had us. But I don't think anybody's gotten 3, like even kind of 3 good ones. Usually there's some bad one in there at some point. So it's like kind of unprecedented, right? Like,
right.
So
I'm legitimately struggling to come up with like a team that had 3 good quarterbacks in a row.
It's tough.
Washington? Isn't it kind of hard to come up with any team that's had 3 like that good quarterbacks?
Well, So Washington, they went from Montana to
49ers.
No. Montana played for Washington at the end of his career.
No, I played for Kansas City.
Or Kansas City. Dang it.
Kansas City, yep.
Okay.
That doesn't help you anyway.
Are you thinking like Doug Williams, Mark Rippon, and
yes.
Who's the other one in there? Because they had like 3 different guys in all those Super Bowls and the Gibbs, didn't they?
None of them
But
were,
they didn't have the longevity.
They didn't. And Mark Rippon really wasn't very good. Doug Williams was, but he was actually better in his younger days. He was just stuck on the Buccaneers for a long time and then excluded from the league. And like it's a hard question too because you probably should have some minimums of time spent. The Vikings actually probably had this happen because they rifled through quarterbacks so quickly when they had Randall Cunningham, Dante Culpepper, and what like Jeff George and Brad Johnson bookending them.
Warren Moon there too.
But that shouldn't count. Like that's not real. They were each
because it's not about year. It's not about like having that for a decade each, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, like Warren Moon was 67 years old.
He was. He was 67 years old.
How many Grey Cups did he win before he came to the NFL?
Like 4. 3?
I was gonna say, like he was a monster in Canada.
Yes, it was a lot. So I think the odds of this happening are like 0.01%. I think this is the first time it's happened in the NFL.
And it just goes to show how much it pays off to do the draft a quarterback when you don't need one.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Also, like the draft capital that comes from flipping quarterbacks was very helpful in the Ron Wolf era.
Yeah, it was. Traded Brunell, traded Hasselbeck. Do we get Amon Green for Hasselbeck? Is that. Or was that for Holmgren?
Okay. Hasselbeck. Didn't Hasselbeck eventually become Aaron Rodgers? Isn't that like part of the?
What do you mean
Hasselbeck
by that?
Was like Hasselbeck's draft capital was traded for something else that like led to.
Oh, I don't know.
I think that there's like some like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon between Hasselbeck and Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to look this up while you guys are reading the next question.
We're racing. All right. We should do the next. We should move questions along, though.
All right.
Because, man.
Evan, not Tex Weston. I can't get over what Jordan Love and this offense managed to do this year. I'm excited for the Dallas game, but their Super Bowl window really opens next season. Obviously, replacing Barry with a more creative defensive coordinator is first on the agenda. But how aggressive can and should the Packers be in free agency over the next couple seasons to maximize their chances of winning while the wide receiver, tight end, rookie are on their rookie deals?
So window does open next year, I think. I mean, it's kind of open now, but not really. But there's still they still have cap consequences next season. And so I would say at least for next season, you don't want that to make that the season where you go out and spend money to plug holes. I think that's probably a mistake. 2025, I think, is when you probably want to you'll have development from all these young guys who are already good. They'll be coming into their actual primes in 2 years, and you'll have a better idea of what you need to plug, and you'll have the money to actually go get real difference makers at that point. So I think they'll be good next year, but I think they will not be aggressive in free agency for this season. I'll bet it'll be 2 seasons before they really start to hit that. And I think
I don't really think they can next year.
I don't think
they
can.
They're still
either.
In kind of cap hell,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, still cap hell next year. There's still a lot of Rodgers money to work off next year. It's not as bad as this year, but it's still bad. So I think that they'll still be really conservative this year, and that's fine. Like they've built internally really, really well. They can take another shot at fixing holes in the draft. And I think they'll be really poised to use free agency to its, you know, most efficient means 2 years from now when everybody kind of gels together at their absolute apex. We answered the question before Matt found it. So, ha.
Oh, no. So they use the draft capital to draft Jamal Reynolds, who then they tried to deal to the Colts, but he failed a physical.
Oh, dear. Okay.
But, there was some, like, Rube Goldberg thing about the Hasselbeck trade, and it is killing me.
What did we do with the third round pick we also got in that trade?
Ooh,
the 72nd overall. Maybe that's where it is. I haven't looked further because I was reading questions. Scarf 21, the Packers make the playoffs. Woo. Oh, I missed the exclamation point. Sorry. In a season where so many things have seemingly gone wrong, the Gen Z Packers somehow pulled through. Considering how well the Packers seem to play lately, imagine if they had a reasonably healthy roster all season, or if Barry was able to run a competent defense without having to be crucified by the fan base first. Is it time to dream of a Super Bowl run for the 2024 season?
Yeah. Your window's open now. That's the thing. Like, it's a little bit of a misnomer to say, like, you need to be absolutely perfectly constructed before you make that Super Bowl run. These things actually tend to happen pretty quickly. Like the example I always go to, the recent one, is the Bengals, who they basically got Joe Burrow. They were bad just for a year, and then they instantly were contenders and found themselves in the Super Bowl. Once you have the quarterback, the rest is all kind of window dressing. And while they don't have like veterans or, you know, necessarily like a bunch of stars that the whole league knows about on the defensive side, especially starting next year, they're contenders. And they will be for the foreseeable future. It's just levels of contenders at that point. That's really it. So yeah, Super Bowl run starting next year. You know, it'd be a long shot this year, obviously, but even this year, I don't think it's impossible. It would only take a couple of lucky breaks to get there. The NFL playoffs get crazy sometimes. Weird things happen. Last year, all of the 49ers quarterbacks all got hurt. that just happened not that long ago. Weird things can happen. So don't give up on this season yet. But yeah, next season, that is the first legitimate one where you're the division front runner and in contention for a bye and all that good stuff. Absolutely.
And the other thing, too, is the Packers are kind of due for some weird things to go their way.
Yeah, also true. It's been a while.
All right.
So you were correct. Torrance Marshall. Okay. Does that name ring any bells?
Yeah, I remember Torrance Marshall.
Torrance Marshall, a linebacker turned special teamer and fullback, had a very cheeks game in the playoffs against the Vikings, which affected the Packers' draft position. I think that was how the Rube Goldberg machine.
All right, so it actually that's pretty far removed, but okay.
All right, PJ Wessels, how poorly does the Dallas game have to go to dampen the mood about this season? And how much competition should Anders have for his job next season?
It's Anders.
Anders.
It's not, though. That's okay.
It is Anders.
Look, he's just start calling him Daniel Carlson's brother. How's that?
Exactly. So I do refer to him as Daniel Carlson's brother, but Anders is from the city in which I live, and locals call him Anders. So
fine.
Okay.
I think if LaFleur pulls a McCarthy, I would feel really bad. Like long developing ISO route offense, clock mismanagement. Like if those things would sour my mood.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. For me, I think it's more really just injuries. That's the only thing that could really do it. Like, if they play a bad game, that's annoying, but whatever. If Barry gets toasted, that's annoying, but whatever. A weird, uncreative LaFleur game would not be good. I'm kind of with you on that. Short of injuries, I think that's probably the right answer. And they should all, you should, first of all, you should always have kicker competition because kickers are cheap and you can have a guy stand out there and kick field goals. And so, yeah, you should give him some competition. He missed too many extra points this year, like struggling with the easy stuff. Yeah, he's got a big leg, but I know they won't give up on him. He can kick far. There's some talent there, but it's always good to have a backup plan in case it just, you know, he loses it. What if he that's another thing. What if he goes out in this game indoors and misses like four kicks and they lose the game by 11? That would be weird, but, you know, That would also be bad. I would be very mad at Anders if that happened.
All right. Aaron Savage, did I get that one right? I don't ever remember hearing that one on the podcast before.
Aaron, he asks pretty frequently, but I do not know how to pronounce his last name.
All right.
Savage.
Non-Packers discussion topic. As a journeyman with modest success who never really got a shot to shine in a starting job, Tyrod Taylor is football Matt Stairs.
That's not bad. Is Tyrod, how many teams has he played for now? That's my only hesitancy there. Oh, a lot. Yeah, that's a good comp.
Yeah, Tyrod's played for a lot. Tyrod only didn't start over Justin Herbert because he had his lung punctured, right? Like, that's what sent him to the Bills?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Like, Minshew's kind of that guy, too, but I think he's only been on three teams, so that's not... Stairs played for everybody. That's the thing with Matt Stairs. Minshew has not been in the league long enough. Is Tyrod randomly Canadian by any chance? He is not. Matt Stairs is. He is Canadian. The best hitter that Canada's ever produced. That might not be.
Not Justin Morneau?
Oh, is he... Was Justin Morneau's Canadian, too? Never mind. Justin Morneau's way better than
Matt
Stairs. That's
a pretty Quebeco name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it is.
Throb Zombie. Ooh. Knowing what we know now regarding Watson's continued health issues, the future prospects of this offense, especially the receiving core and the upcoming running back contract situations, would you have pulled the trigger on the Watson-Taylor trade?
Oh, man.
No, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Like with hindsight.
With hindsight, I think I would have.
Ah, jeez. I don't know, man. I have a hard
time. Knowing that Watson was going to miss six games this year?
I just have a hard time making myself trade a wide receiver for a running back, man.
Especially one that you're going to have to pay for him to be around.
Yeah.
About, right?
I still don't think I do it, but it's a lot closer, and I totally get it. I still think you can just find guys in the draft if you really want to, or even outside. Like, Sam Congato happened once, guys. This is not that hard. Jonathan Taylor is awesome, though. Like, you would be getting a good running back. And one thing you could say about Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is special. He is better than the average running back. He is definitely good to have, comparable to the average running back. And Taylor's in that same kind of category, but not as good. So I still think I don't do it. I'd rather just gamble on Watson. Close, though. Good question.
And one of the nicer things about Jones being hurt as much as he was is that it doesn't seem like LaFleur has been scared to play him more the last month.
That's true.
Yeah, but the downside is we're getting the stupid correlation causation argument about 20 carries.
Yep.
Did you know that the Packers are 5-1 in games where Aaron Jones gets more than 20 carries?
It also would be like Dylan's also hurt. And so yes.
He can't hold a ball. His hand is broken.
Do we know when he's coming back? Because I would rather have Aaron Jones running 20 times a game for the rest of the season, and I don't want AJ Dillon to come back because he's worse.
You want to DeMarco Murray Aaron Jones?
Yes, I do. I want a bench where he can go sit with I want a bench where Eric Stokes and AJ Dillon can hang out together with Devondre Campbell and not get into the game.
AJ Dillon's been decent the last.
He has. Month. He has been decent. However, he is not as good as Aaron Jones, not even close. So, if Jones is available in the playoffs, I don't want Dillon touching the ball ever. That's all. If Jones is hurt, different story, but he's not.
And he's been good. It's been fun. All right. Scott wants to know, he has a theory. He doesn't have a question, he's got a theory. Okay. It seems possible Barry's strength is player development and getting everyone to understand and execute their assignments. Although the defense has its glaring deficiencies, young players seem to be coming along nicely regardless of pedigree. Even younger journeymen like Ballantyne are holding up okay. This may be what guys who keep promoting and retaining him see. It is a lot.
Oh. Sometimes when you're reading the questions, you got to infer some articles that are there.
It is a long question. Yep.
It's a lot for the job of a position coach. Peter Principle, everybody drink.
Yeah. Yep. So basically saying Barry might be a good position coach who's stretched as a defensive coordinator, but we might be seeing some of that come through later in the year. So I think we have a consistent position with the podcast, which is that Barry deficiencies still tend to show up with some routine. And while this last game was, it's hard to find too much that was wrong with it. I think that the Barry game plan was actually pretty good. It was executed quite well. The young players did well. There were still guys college open in the middle of the field a couple of times. And, you know, that's one of them. And also, he will occasionally just rise to the occasion. The problem is he's bad at adjusting back. I don't know if you can run the Bears game plan against anybody else because the Bears are kind of a weird offense with a quarterback who can run but not throw. Maybe that is Barry's strength, is just the execution guy. That wouldn't be that unusual. That's kind of what Mike Pettine was like. Mike Pettine is also an executor, not a strategist. That's what he always was in the Ryan defense on the Jets. That's what he's kind of best at, and a lot of those guys exist, and they are often good at getting guys to play the right way until the strategy changes on them, and then it takes them 3 weeks to adjust back, and they give up 40 points along the way. So, yeah, maybe, possible. If you want to give a positive spin on Joe, that's not a bad one.
Okay. JD wants to know, Paul, are you at all changing your mind on Bo Melton the same way you did Jaden Reed? Ryan or Runyon?
But didn't you just spend an entire podcast praising him as like he was good at his role and he's good in this usage? And
so Bo Melton might very well be good, but it's different than with Jaden Reed. I'm adjusting ROPS this year because of Jaden Reed and a few other guys. The bottom line is like explosive numbers in college for what receivers correlate much better with NFL success over the last couple of years than the number of balls they catch. It's sort of like there's like a floor you should have on your catch percentage in college. It shouldn't be too bad. We call it the Semi Fajoko line. If you can go look up his catch percentage if you want. But the fact like Reed was super explosive and that should have carried the day on his evaluation. And it did for people who got Jaden Reed right. And kudos to all you people who did that. Bo Melton wasn't good in really any way in college. Now, he was buried on a terrible Rutgers team, and he did suffer the problem where he was clearly the best guy on that offense, and so he got it thrown to him like over and over and over and over again, and that does kill your efficiency pretty hard. And he's a good athlete, but like I think that Bo Melton is more of a post-college development story, and you know there's a reason he wasn't drafted. So my evaluation of him is, yeah, he looks like a great development story, a good athlete who's worked himself into being something real. And yeah, I'm higher on Bo Melton, much, much, much higher than I was 6 weeks ago. But I think he was a hard scout out of college. That's all. Like, there's a lot of Bo Meltons. They don't all turn into current Bo Melton. And it's nice that they got this one to work out. And I'll go with Ryan, but they're both imperfect. Ryan and Runyon are both imperfect.
Yeah. I guess Ryan.
I'll take the bigger heft. That's all.
All right, Donald Anderson has an update for us. The Packers have gone one game since receiving a personal foul. Heck, they only got one penalty of any type, which was bogus anyway. A great performance that should be commended.
So, real quick, before we read part two of the question, I think it's worth pointing out that there definitely should have been personal fouls called in this game. The Bears and the Packers got into repeated fights where there was a lot of pushing and shoving. So I don't think that the hit on Fields should have been called a personal foul, but I'm also surprised it wasn't, that Bears fans are all complaining about. So we didn't get called for one, but I'm not going to go so far as to say we didn't commit any.
Yeah. But also, Heath had his helmet knocked off of his head after the play.
Yes. Heath's helmet got knocked out. That is absolutely true. That did happen. So they just didn't want to call anything. So, yay, our one-game streak took basically refs not calling any penalties at all. All right, continue. All right,
Donald's question. How did Jair grade out in this game? He wasn't assigned to more all day, as we expected, and there seemed to be some chicken with a head cut off moments. But did his attitude show up in film, or is it time for Russ Ball to fire up his spreadsheets?
I think he was pretty good, but I have to admit he didn't pop a lot. Part of the problem is the Bears didn't actually throw that many passes, and they definitely didn't throw that many to wide receivers. And I've watched a lot of that Bear game again, but I was not paying attention to the secondary that much. So I think he was fine. It's probably good that his name wasn't mentioned that much. That probably means he was mostly doing his job, which is all you really want him to do there. But I have to admit, I actually do not know. I'm trying to pull up his PFF right now because that's as good as I'm going to get spur of the moment. Matt, I don't know. Do you watch Jair at all?
He was really grabby.
Was he really grabby?
Yeah, him and the Allentines were both quite grabby. It was like watching a college game.
Well, I guess
it was awesome.
Maybe that's just a good job reading the refs. If you can get away with it, get away with it.
Also, I think it was like there was like a sailed pass on. It was like a pass to the flat, and it sailed. And Jair celebrated it like he did something, and I hate that so much.
Good times. Why can't I find PFF's grades for the game? Yeah, whatever. I'll pull it up during some other question.
All right. Lately, Joel Osment, the Packers' offense looks hotter than Tyreek Hill's house.
Poor Tyreek.
So why abandon play action on the final drive? Seems like the offense equivalent of prevent defense, which has been established as dumb.
We have a complaint about the final drive of this game.
I guess so.
We ran off the last 6 minutes and 8 seconds of this game. I didn't. I thought it was really good. Was it not?
I thought so.
I wonder if it's a question of, it could go wrong when you need it to, when you need play action to be successful. I guess. If Musgrave doesn't convert that third down, I think that we have a lot more concerns and questions. And
that's a good point, I suppose. So. I guess the other thing is when you are running out the clock, play action would conceivably work much better, right? Because a run is always possible. So there's that. That is a bit of an odd choice, but I find it hard to complain. We never run out 6 minutes of clock. It just never, we run three times and waste a minute and a half and punt the ball back to the
team. No, we run out 6 minutes of clock in the first quarter.
Yeah, we do that.
Not at the end of the game.
I thought that drive was great. It made me happy. So, Jair was their 9th graded defender. He had a 70.7 for the game, which is okay. Not great. His weak link, though, stupid PFF. God damn it. They gave him a 39.8 in pass rush, and I don't care about his pass rush grade. They should just not do that. Coverage was 74.6, which is the third highest. Oh, wait. This is the season. I pulled up. PFF is broken. Never mind. Ignore everything I just said. Like, I pulled it up for the game, but it has Rasul Douglas in it. So maybe that's the first Bear game and they have it upside down. Oh, that's probably it. Here we go. There's my problem. Let's see. Oh, boy. Where is he? He doesn't have a grade?
Whoa.
What? How? Hold on. I have to control F. It's going to make a noise. Yeah, he's not on the report. All right. Never. We know nothing. We have no information. Alas. All right. Let's do more questions.
Old man on a bike in Shirlington.
Oh, all right.
I'm just an old man on a bike, but I don't think enough can be said about Goody's job of turning last year's pick, number 45, into Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, and Carl Brooks. It's true that Goody has made some mistakes, such as giving up on Amari too soon and signing Simone Biles' husband. But that has got to be one of the best draft moves in recent memory. My question this week is about Hard Knocks, as I was really looking forward to seeing the Packers featured next year, but that's off the table now with them making the playoffs. A lot of people seem to be opposed to being on Hard Knocks, and I'm curious what you guys think.
I mean, it would be great content, but I wouldn't actually enjoy it if we were on Hard Knocks. I would just feel bad. I don't like those shows to begin with. I'm a curmudgeon who doesn't like... Everybody else likes Hard Knocks better than I do. I don't actually like it. I feel like it's... everybody's acting. Everybody's different when they're on camera. Reality shows aren't reality because of that fact. And that goes for football teams, too. And you don't get a real take on it. But, you know, it would be easy to write about. And there's something to be said for that. But, yes, that trade was phenomenal. It's going to go down as one of their best, I think. So, yeah. But I'm not pro Hard Knocks. I bet JR would be pro Hard Knocks. That would be fun to write about.
Well, I think JR would be pro Hard Knocks for the content.
For the content, yeah.
We all kind of agree that it does suck for the team.
Yeah, suck for the team, good for the content. That's right.
But then what I don't understand is how the other – what was the one that followed the Cardinals? The one that was on Amazon?
That
did the whole season, and, like, no one complained about that.
I don't know. I actually don't watch it for real.
So it was like a Larry Fitzgerald year, so it was a while ago.
All right.
But no one complained about being followed the whole season. So maybe it's just the pace of Hard Knocks that's the issue?
That could be. I don't know. Secrets are revealed.
Tom Haight, the pulling of Justin Fields in the fourth to be evaluated for a concussion was very odd.
Sure was.
I guess props to the NFL for pulling him even for an important moment. However, the hit he took was several plays before that, and the evaluation took maybe 5 seconds, and he only missed a play. How can the NFL get this right so their players' brains don't ooze out of their ears later in life? Or do they even care?
There's the last one.
They don't care.
The only comparison that I truly ever agree with when people say that the NFL is a gladiator sport is the overarching disposal feeling of players that the league has about them. That's the only like actual gladiator sport esque thing about it.
Yeah, they move on quick.
They just didn't want to see Nathan Peterman throw a pass. I think that's what it was.
They didn't. I'm surprised they didn't fake it a little bit better than that, though. Like, you can't do any kind of evaluation in the amount of time he was off on the sidelines. It's impossible. It was clearly fake, and clearly fake is what they want to avoid. Like, you have the whole thing there just as theater to show that you're caring, and I think you need to at least have plausible deniability, even if you're going to do a bad job of it. So, that's what they're doing. They have a process. They put them through the process, and now they can claim that they cared, even though they don't at all.
Bryce Trozen, the most obvious player to watch out of the Dallas D is Parsons. How can the pack neutralize his strength? My 90s album title for the week is the B-side comp, The Master Plan, from Oasis, dedicated to the Packers front office. I also have the song Acquiesce.
Acquiesce.
Acquiesce. Yeah. that has a lyric that describes the 2023-24 vibes. Because we need each other, we believe in another.
We
or
believe
in, one,
in
another.
One another.
Yeah, I'm struggling to read here. It's been a long, it's a long list, guys.
It's such a long list. So Micah Parsons is good at everything. That's the big problem with him. You don't have too many of those guys out there. And really the way to slow him down is just to always get an extra person on him when at all possible. Don't do anything stupid. Don't have Tucker Kraft trying to like take him one-on-one. I had to double check myself. I thought I pulled the text and said Tyson there for a second. But it's challenging. The whole Dallas defense is pretty loaded. And if you dedicate too much to one guy, you're going to get toasted by somebody else on the team as well. So it's very difficult. He's fast. He's strong. He can win in multiple different ways. And I guess maybe the biggest issue with Parsons versus the Packer offensive line, sorry, I'm trying to look up numbers at the same time I'm talking, which is a dumb thing to do, is that he is very powerful in addition to being very fast. Like, I would say he's more of a speed guy, but the Packers do run a little bit light, and he is capable of pulling off those bull rushes and getting interior pressure, like collapse the pocket pressure on you. And that's what can really give this offensive line trouble. They're very good at pass blocking, but they are not the strongest line ever. So they should work to chip him. They should work to make life miserable for him. But he's just a tough matchup. This is when you get the playoffs, you run into this. And it's difficult, and you just got to hope your guys hold up, that Rashid Walker holds up, that Zach Tom holds up, if Zach Tom is okay. Hopefully he is. That's why they get paid the big bucks. That's why they are ranked highly as well. But Parsons is special. So yeah, you try to keep him in check. Try and hold him. Don't let him wreck games and hope you can do that enough times.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Oh, we may have lost Tim.
MKE tailgate there questions?
Wait, what?
Ryan and Bayview.
Oh, it says MKE tailgate as the question answer.
Yeah, we know who it is, right? How many playoff games do the Packers need to win for Joe Barry to secure his job for next year?
That's a good question, actually, because I think if they win against Dallas, he's probably still done, depending on how the game goes. But like, if they get to the NFC Championship game, that gets tough. I don't, Matt. Do you think? What do you think the round is where Barry's safe?
Barry's safe if they win the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, he's obviously safe if they win the Super Bowl. Anything that's less than that, that's it. You really?
I think anything less than that, and he starts to get looks by other teams.
What if they're like good against the Cowboys and they play the 49ers and they have like another 13-10 49ers loss? Like, I think maybe he comes back if that happens.
Well, how much of this is about how much Matt LaFleur is actually involved in the last month in deciding things and pushing things versus like how much has he gotten involved versus what he was earlier in the year?
In actually like holding the defense accountable and fixing things himself?
Yeah, because if he's doing a lot of that, then it's not really about Joe Barry anymore and he's still getting fired
right.
because he's not doing what he wanted, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a part of this where we just don't know internally. Yeah. It may have already been decided and they're just playing out the stretch. But I don't know. Things do get tougher if they are actually good against elite level. First, I don't think it's going to be a problem. Ryan, I don't think you got to worry about it. But I guess not making the Super Bowl and having good defensive performances is a little bit of a risk, yeah. Not much, but a bit.
All right. K times seven. Our defense looked formidable, rushing five against a quarterback that can boogie. Do you think we will try to keep the pressure on Dak or go back to a soft zone? I don't think I'm going to like your answer.
I do think the Bears are a special case and that there is some likelihood that they go back to their sort of default look for the Cowboys game. That said, Dak's at least a little similar. He's obviously a much better passer than Justin Fields is by a country mile, but you're going to have to do some of the same things to limit his mobility. And just like the Bears, honestly, the receiving core is kind of similar. Like CeeDee Lamb is kind of a better DJ Moore, and Jake Ferguson is kind of a better Cole Kmet, and there's not much after that. So maybe this translates a little bit. Maybe if you play a similar style, you get kind of similar results, and maybe they see it that way. My only problem is this. Like, I feel like they always go back to their default. And you know, they beat the tar out of the Rams with Brett Rypien playing a quarterback who couldn't pass to save his life, playing a style designed to stop that guy. And then they didn't do that against Tommy DeVito, and they Baker's not the same thing, but they don't always learn their lessons. Joe gets dumb sometimes. So I will always bet on Joe being dumb. That's kind of my default bet, and that would be my bet. But, you know, they have played well in similar situations recently, so maybe they'll get this right. Matt's just smiling, so I think that's probably.
I'm still in the throes of maybe Matt LaFleur is actually calling the defense and Joe Barry is just a figurehead. I'm imagining that scenario and it's just making me happy.
So I think even if Matt himself isn't doing that, it's certainly possible that he gave somebody else a little bit more responsibility, you know, even just as like a quality check guy, a lower level guy, basically being like, hey, if you see Joe do anything dumb, let me know right away or fix it yourself. That kind of stuff does happen. Like when you lose confidence in somebody at the top, even if you don't want to fire him on Christmas, which is when we kind of all were clamoring for him to go, that often is a stopgap that'll happen. So, you know, that's possible too. They have been kind of better since then. Not great, but better.
Yeah. Dutch Boy 5. What a difference a year makes. Going into last year's Week 18 matchup was super nervous and the vibe was not good. This year, much more confident, but also the vibe was so much better for the team. I think it also helps that it was Matt LaFleur's one of Matt LaFleur's better games. What say you? Rank his best three games this year.
And Dutch Boy has Lions, Bears, Chiefs.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair ranking.
Yeah.
I think Lions is definitely his best game.
Yeah, Lions is... I agree with
that. This was a shellacking, but also Bears aren't good. But still, it's a division rival. It's a must-win game. The scenario kind of puts it up for me. Yeah, I'll take those three in that order.
Yeah, Kansas City was good. It's hard to disagree with that. Like, the Vikings game was really good, too, but it wasn't, like, a real game for a lot of reasons. So, yeah, I think that's it. I agree with that. I have no changes to that.
That Chief game was a lot of fun to be at. Yeah. I'll say that.
That was a good one. I feel like that was the first, like, real, hey, maybe we actually have something here game of the year, too. So that one is even a little extra special.
Especially because that was right after the Lions game, right? Like back-to-back weeks, I think.
Was that back-to-back after the Lions? Yeah, so. It was. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so Richard Proctor, who will have worse clock management next Sunday, Mike McCarthy or Matt LaFleur?
Mike. Mike will.
Yeah, probably Mike.
Yeah.
Try and play your game. That was fun. getting yelled at for trying to throw it. That was a nice touch.
That was also back when Devontae wasn't good.
Which game? Because I've posted both of them lately.
Oh, you posted. Oh, the clock management game.
The clock management one, yeah.
Okay, no, I'm talking about the quarterback simulator. That's the that's my favorite.
Yes, because that's when we get punished for running. Aaron doesn't like that, or whatever kind of Aaron. But yes, I love the clock simulator game. I think it really captures McCarthy perfectly. Matt has issues with the clock once in a while, but I feel like this Packers iteration is much better. And even like the weird thing that happened against the Bears wasn't like a clock management problem. Maybe it was. There was some rumblings that play call didn't have an end zone shot. It was just outs, and just having outs is dumb. But it's not like clock management dumb. It's play calling dumb. Like they actually were going to get a field goal there until that happened. So,
The only part that's time management is whether or not they should have taken the timeout after the sack. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't even think that was that bad. I would in some instances rather have the extra timeout and 40 seconds gone than have one fewer timeout and 40 seconds there, because you get a little more control at the end if you have the extra timeout in reserve, which they didn't, but they could have. And McCarthy's just always bad on the clock. It's been consistent for like a decade now, and it just happened against Detroit. So we know that one is still there and still lurking and can jump up and bite him very easily.
All right, Ryan Ziegler, the more we learn about Redacted, Greg Jennings and his sister might have been right. Culture change is hard, but it seems that getting rid of Redacted might have been the best move this team has made in a long time. The energy feels good, and I'm so excited to watch football, playoff football again. Why not us?
Oh, man, today was rough for the people who follow Redacted.
He's very so true. Annoying. He's so annoying. I'm so glad he's gone.
But also, I mean, he's annoying in a libelous sense.
Yes, he is.
Like, or is it slander? Because it's spoken.
I just say defamation. Cover the whole thing.
There you go. Tomato, tomato.
Yes. He can't have been good for the locker room. Obviously, there are people who in the locker room do like Aaron Rodgers. Like, that's clearly the case. Like, Bakhtiari is his bud. So it's like he's like a total cancer, but it's got to be annoying to be around him. It just has to, for at least some people. And always making it about himself. Always, like, it's all Aaron all the time. It's so nice to have him not on the team anymore. Vibes,
it's all Redacted.
So much
Redacted
better.
All the time, Paul. Yeah. Redacted.
And, like, I feel like when we had Aaron, he had some annoying parts at the end especially, but at least they were kind of novel. Now he's like doing the same stuff. His shtick hasn't even changed. He's not even annoying in an interesting way anymore. It's not good. I'm glad he's gone. The Jets can have him. It's just so much more fun. Like, this is so much better. It's infinite.
Can you imagine him dealing with the young receiving core, like after a drop and all that stuff? Like, it would have been terrible.
Yeah. He would have been instantly – think about how the first part of the season went. He would have been instantly demanding, like, Lazard and Cobb back and forcing them the ball in traffic. And this never would have happened. He would have stopped this entire development cycle. Thank God he's gone.
All right. Rob Regis, which division rival is primed to give Green Bay the most trouble going forward, given that we have our long-term quarterback ostensibly figured out and the others don't?
A good one.
I mean, if the Bears take one of the two blue chips, they'll screw it up.
I'm confident that they will find a way to screw up their decision.
Until I actually see it, I agree with that. And it's not even like those are sure things, which wouldn't even necessarily be their fault. But like, people have concerns about Caleb Williams, and he had some weird games down the stretch. And I will tell you, I know Drake May is the consensus, one of the two consensus anyway, and he looks great when he plays. He has not completed a super high percentage of his passes at North Carolina. It's kind of weird. Usually the guys who are super good are actually more accurate than he is. So just throwing that out there, they might screw it up. The Lions are going to lose Ben Johnson, right? He's probably going to end up as a head coach. He's already taken interviews.
He's getting calls.
Yeah, like Washington, I think, is interviewing him like now. So that hurts them bad. And Goff is fine, but he's just Goff. The Vikings are I think in limbo, like it's Kirk or nothing.
Russell Wilson, right? Aren't they the favorites?
Oh man.
I mean, that's a terrible idea. That should not happen.
We're all in agreement that that's a downgrade from Kirk, right?
It's absolutely a downgrade from Kirk.
But it does fit the history and tradition of the Vikings of taking somebody else's old quarterback.
Yep, that's true. So, I guess it's the Bears, but no, I don't, because they're still not run well. I don't know. We're just in a good spot. They all have glaring weaknesses. I think the Vikings are still the best run team of the three, but they're just... They needed to do the quarterback thing. Like, they actually need to, like, suck and get a quarterback or somehow accumulate a bunch of draft capital and get a quarterback or something. They're good at drafting.
Or luck into Michael Penix and it works out or
sure,
something.
Sure, yes.
This year, right?
Stop. Yeah. But they also seem bad at it. Like, Kellen Mond is bad. And they spent, he was like a third rounder, like, which is kind of high for a guy that bad. And Jaren Hall doesn't look like it either. He can't really throw. It's a problem if you're a quarterback. So they need to get better at that too. I mean, not that it's easy to find a quarterback after the first round. It's very much not, but it's happened on occasion. It's not impossible. I hope Penix doesn't end up there. I think that's a good spot for him.
All right. Jeremy Moen, Owens was in the process of the tackle on the field slide.
Okay, that's a throwback to the fair catch against Reed.
Yeah,
where the special team or whomever was in the process.
Oh yeah,
quote, the process of the tackle.
Yep, yep, yep.
When he hit Reed during the fair catch.
I think that's really why it feels like that is why they didn't call it, right? That he slid so late.
I think so. Yes, I think that is why, and didn't actually make contact with his head either.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's the big one, is you don't hit the head and they really don't care.
Yeah.
Even if his head hit the ground and he should have been out after that play.
Yeah.
They don't care about that either.
But he was out two plays later. So.
Yep.
Oh, this is a lot of words. Oh.
There are so many questions.
Do you want me to take this one?
Someone say his name. I'll take
a few questions. I feel like reading. Cheese Cavaricci. I think maybe new, so welcome aboard if you are new. It's no surprise that Packers fans are pretty happy with the rookie campaigns of Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave, but I do wonder sometimes how different things might be if the team drafted pre-draft darling Darnell Washington. I was on the DW train for all the reasons laid out by RAE and APC podcasters, so when the Pack passed on him four times to pick Van Ness, Musgrave, Reed, and Kraft, I almost threw a block of sharp cheddar at my TV screen, but I'm happy we have those four players today. Me too. If you don't mind, please give us a summary of how Darnell Washington's rookie season has been and how you see him developing from this point forward, and tell us if you'd swap him today for either of our top two tight ends, if you were GM for a day and the opportunity presented itself. I'm going to assume the answer is no, but is the answer anything other than no?
Darnell Washington is being fiercely misused in the offense in which he lives. I just think his ceiling is so stupid high, and he was my draft crush, that it is hard. I mean, it's like, yeah, so he's had 7 receptions this year with no touchdowns.
Yep.
That's just embarrassing.
So for those who don't know, he wound up on the Steelers. And so, you know, the Steelers already have a pass-catching tight end in Pat Freiermuth. That's probably not how you pronounce his name, but I don't care. So the passing opportunities haven't really been there for him, even though it's not like you're fighting for a ton of... I mean, the Steelers are weird. First of all, their quarterback sucks. Their quarterbacks suck. It's incredible they're in the playoffs, honestly. So they do have pretty good receivers, though. That's the thing. Like, they have a pass-catching tight end. Their receivers are okay. And so Washington is mostly a blocker who catches a pass every once in a while. He's basically been Mercedes Lewis. And he's actually been okay. His pass blocking grade on the year is 72.3. He is a monster blocker. You know, he's a big dude who can get after it. But he just didn't get a lot of opportunities in the passing game. But no, I would not swap them out. I just wouldn't. I think you can maybe make a case on Musgrave, because Musgrave was perpetually hurt all through college, and then he was hurt lately for us, although lacerated spleens are not exactly recurring soft tissue injuries either.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, Musgrave actually is one of the few guys in the draft who also like hits on pretty good predictive metrics in terms of his yards per catch in college. He was very explosive. He just didn't play very much. And Tucker Kraft played down a division, and so he was a tough scout from all angles, from a scouting stance and from an analytics stance, because stats at the lower division don't tell you very much. The only one thing we were pretty sure on him is that he would be a yak monster. And now that we've seen him in professional football, playing with professional players, no, I would not give up anything for Tucker Kraft on the tight end front. He is currently third in DVOA. He is behind only George Kittle and Isaiah Likely for guys with 30 catches or more. I wish we'd seen more of him, but Darnell, I still like, and I would take him on a team, but ours are good, and I would not trade them. All right. I'm reading. No, sorry.
This is like the last time.
My fault. I had Pittsburgh's PFF up, and I lost my rundown, and I had to find it, and I didn't
David,
find it quick enough. Oh, you got this one. Okay.
Yeah. What's the most likely path for the Bears to screw up the number one pick? And this offseason, generally now that Fields is probably leaving. Well, the way they screw it up is by not letting Fields leave and by drafting Marvin Harrison Jr.
I think there's another more creative way they can screw this up, which is to bring Fields back, trade that pick for a haul of other picks, draft Marvin Harrison Jr., which I think that's like the surest thing in the draft, and then try one of the down roster quarterback guys like Jaden Daniels or Penix or J.J. McCarthy, and like have a competition.
Oh man, J.J. McCarthy is actually the perfect choice for the Bears because he's Justin Fields.
What if
you remove him from his offensive line and from his system? And
I have a better way that they'll screw this up, a related way that they'll screw this up. Here's what they'll do: they'll fire Eberflus. They will hire Harbaugh, and then they will trade that pick back and draft J.J. McCarthy. So they'll have Harbaugh with his. That's a Bear thing to do. Like familiarity over actual scouting is a very Bear thing to do.
Do you think Harbaugh hires his son to do special teams still?
I assume he does. It's the NFL.
Well, so yeah, his son is the Michigan special teams coordinator and almost cost them the Alabama game.
Yep.
Garbage.
So that's going to be it. Hire Harbaugh, draft J.J. McCarthy, still keep Fields and have them compete. And yeah, then that's how you wreck things. All right, back to me. Mittens St. Brown, who must be new, because I have never seen that name before on here.
I've never seen Mittens St. Brown.
Mittens St., which is great, by the way. thanks for the entertaining season, and I wanted to let you know I only joined MKE Tailgate because early in the season you finally explained what meatloaf would not do for love, and I have wondered about that since I was 13. That is why we do the show. My question, would our lives be better or worse if Joe Barry was fired after the Carolina game and the results since then were exactly the same? In this universe, does Green Bay somehow end up hiring Greg Williams or fill in another member of the current staff as full-time DC heading into the possible upcoming Super Bowl window? So, Joe Barry's fired, pretty the Carolina game. Nothing changes, so the defense looks the same. But instead of Joe Barry operating the defense, we have a new face operating the defense. That's an interesting hypothetical, because the defense has sort of looked superficially okay since then. I don't think so. The thing about one of the reasons that didn't happen is because there wasn't an obvious person on the team to take the reins from Barry. There's just everybody's green. Everybody's very junior. And I think without like an outstanding defensive turnaround, which it would still be a bad idea to hire that guy because that is often just noise. But without that kind of thing, you're still looking outside the organization for the next DC in that scenario. I don't think that's enough to get you the job. I like the question because it is like a biased question. Like, do you guys think this sucks just because it's Barry doing the calling? And if it was somebody else, would you still think that? I don't think so. I think we still see this for what it is, and they would too. All right.
Regression to the mean. Drink.
Yes, that. All right. Lucas Stoller asks, if Joe Barry's defense is designed to succeed against top quarterbacks, which get into that, does that bode well for the Packers' chances now that they will only face playoff-caliber quarterbacks, or will it just be less embarrassing to be roasted by Dak or Brock instead of DeVito? Matt, you want to take the Barry defense versus Mahomes part of this question?
No, because you explain it so much better than I do.
I do? How?
Yeah.
So I'm not even that confident in my explanation.
That Mahomes is bad at. That's what you talk about.
Yeah. Well, I think Mahomes is bad at patience and likes to wing it out deep and test things that he shouldn't be testing and hates to hand it off and punish the too high shell. And then that is that in a nutshell. But like, Mahomes isn't that dumb. I think a lot of it is just kind of luck, and that the Chiefs this year especially don't have good weapons. Like, it's easy to shut down the Chief receivers because the Chief receivers blow. They're all bad except for Kelsey. And, you know, even he got his a little bit in that game. So yeah. I think that might be overstated a bit, even though it does, you know, they've had good success against Mahomes. It's true. But sometimes that happens. Like, in baseball, we often have a thing where, like, it seems like a bad hitter owns a good pitcher, but it's just noise. It's just like that guy got lucky like four times in a row against Greg Maddux, and it looks like he owns Greg Maddux, but it's like, no, you know, enough iterations, crap like that just happens once in a while. I think that's more what it is. But
so this is where you just go, Joe Barry owns Greg Maddux. Is that where we're going?
Basically, yes. That's correct. So,
well, I will admit I've watched a ton of Chiefs games this year thanks to my daughter.
Oh, really? Okay.
Is your daughter a big Taylor Swift fan?
She is, very much so. That's why she loved going to the game. And we spent most of the game with me cheering and then turning to her and going, sorry, kiddo, because it was a Packers good play. But watching all the games and having Kelsey on my fantasy team, like, one of the things I really noticed this year is how much Mahomes didn't have any patience. And if he had waited two more seconds or a second and a half, Kelsey would have been wide open for 15 yards. But he was rushing it to somebody else or taking the long throw or whatever instead of waiting for the play to develop. And I think some of that's because his line hasn't been very good for him this year. And he's just not patient at all. I don't know.
All right. Well, maybe there is something to that then. Little Aaron and Patrick there sometimes. But
yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But will they be better in the playoffs? I still wouldn't bet on that being
playoffs.
The case. No. But, you know, on the other hand, they did shut down the 49ers last time they played them, so who knows, honestly. Sometimes things happen there, too. But I'm not counting on Barry being a strength in the playoffs. I just am not. Like that. No. All right, Matt Piggott, our good friend over at Hey, We Love Your Pod. The Packers have beaten the Cowboys in 9 of their last 10 matchups and have never lost in Jerry World. Pretty neat, but does it matter at all? The Cowboys fan base might feel some trauma about the Packers, the same way many of us feel about the cursed 49ers, but is this at all relevant? And how are you feeling about our chances of keeping the streak alive?
So, Aaron Rodgers has played 4 games in Jerry World, won all those. Maybe he just got lucky against Greg Maddux 4 times.
Maybe he did. It's possible.
Also, one of those games was against the Steelers, so it's not fair.
I don't think history matters very much here. First of all, the Packers are all new, you know? Like, this is a very different team than the Rodgers teams that have been there lately and not lately. It's also a very different Cowboys team than at least some of the last versions that we played there. So, stuff like little streaks like that, I don't think matter too much at all. I will say this. I think that the Packers are, generally speaking, better outside of Lambeau than in it. Maybe that won't be true in the post-Aaron era, but I do like the weather-controlled environment for a high-octane passing offense. So there is that, if nothing else. So I don't know. Anybody?
Vegas thinks it's going to be a shootout. Over-under is 49.
Nice. That's probably good for Green Bay, honestly.
I do love seeing Cowboy fans talk about trauma when, what, during Favre's time, the Cowboys were the team that we could never get past, right?
Yeah, that was our
opening. At least the beginning.
But that's the thing is, you see, we mostly interact with rival fans on Twitter, which is a website that is full of children.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, like, do you guys remember when Kyler Murray was a rookie and they asked him why he wasn't a Cowboys fan? Because he's from, like, the greater Dallas area. And he was like, yeah, well, when I was growing up, the Cowboys always sucked. And people were like, what? No, the Cowboys were great. Oh, my God, he grew up in the 2000s.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
The other thing about, so I'm old, and I remember those Cowboys teams. For the Aikman, Irvin, Emmitt Smith, awesome defense, Deion Sanders Cowboys teams were unbelievably great. They were fantastic teams. They knocked the Packers out like 3 years in a row. But like the Cowboys just went on to play, you know, another game, often in the Super Bowl. So we weren't really their rivals. We were just the stepping stone on the way for them winning a whole bunch. It was just the other way around. Like we saw them as rivals, but I don't know. They might have a little bit of it now. I do feel like they've suffered some pretty rough ones at our hands. They also beat us in more points, 99, consarn it. They were the ultimate victors of that stupid team. All right, let's see. Max Bord, who also might be new. Have we had Max before? You know what? When you don't read the questions most of the time, you don't always catch all the names. Quay Walker was asked, what was different about this game? And he said, I just feel like we bought into the plan. A lot of guys didn't come in here with a different mindset. We don't like that call, or whatever the case might be. Just buying in, controlling what we can control. Could that mean that players were freelancing and leaving holes where Barry couldn't have possibly anticipated or controlled? If that's no longer the case, is it possible the performances against Minnesota and Chicago are more replicable than we thought? Provided the clip from Quay, but we can't play it because we're on a podcast. Maybe? Matt, why are you staring like that?
I'm just... Okay. Like, players don't buy in if they don't believe in the system.
Right.
And, like, oh, we don't like that call or whatever the case may be, just buying in, controlling what we can control. That just sounds more like he takes players' opinions into account nowadays, like he did at the end of last season when he saved his job.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. The other thing with defense is there's two aspects here. If guys are freelancing, it is possible guys are freelancing because they just feel like freelancing. It hasn't been drilled into them that they, you know, need to keep to their roles for the defense to work. What Matt just said is true, that they're not believing in the defense altogether, etc. There's another part of this too, though, which is if your teammates fail enough in their responsibilities, freelancing starts to happen to cover the gaps that they leave. And most of the time with bad defenses, that's kind of how things trickle out of control. It's that you'll have one linebacker who's just missing his responsibilities, so the safety cheats up to cover for that guy missing his responsibilities, and that area gets picked on, and it just kind of spirals out of control. So it's not necessarily always the defensive coordinator not instilling belief in the system. It can also be the players not able to execute it to such a level that the players on the field feel they have to compensate for people. That's a big problem, too. However, I think this defense is pretty talented, and I don't know. I think that Quay Walker quote does raise a lot of questions too. and I do also wonder, like, what is the Jaire Alexander context in that quote as well? Because he does like to freelance and he will get himself out of position. And I wonder a little bit if that's part of what's being contemplated there, because this was Alexander's game back post suspension. And I do think he did play his role a little bit better than he typically does. So that too. It's complicated is the long answer to that.
Calm down, Facebook status 2008.
Yeah. All right. Matt, would you like to read the Danish Cheesehead?
Yes, I'll read the Danish Cheesehead. But also I want to bring up the fact that one of the raffle prizes at Trinity during this game was a Wisconsin Kringle, which I have never seen in person.
Oh,
that
really?
Is so freaking big. Oh, my God.
How big was it, out of curiosity? I want to know how authentic it was. Like a tire?
It was probably like, if it was a circle instead of an oval,
yeah,
it would have been like a 12-inch diameter.
Oh, yeah, that's about right. Okay. Yeah, that was real.
Yep. Okay. The Danish... Put
right,
that at the
yes.
front of my mind.
They're very similar pastries. I gotcha.
Is it technically a Danish?
What is technically a Danish?
A donut without a hole.
Well, it's got a hole, though.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
So, no.
I don't know. Okay. All right. Something along the lines of Max Bort, but with a twist. At some point during the season where the defense really struggled, I vaguely remember that Matt LaFleur said he would engage in the defensive game planning. Might we be lent more locker room credibility to Barry to stop Gary, Enikbari, Alexander, and Nixon from financing or big plays?
And sticking to their job instead. Sorry, you cut out for a second. Kansas,
oh, sorry.
Gotcha.
My bad. Didn't we just kind of talk about this?
We did. I think we kind of answered it. And maybe it's possible that there is, so there may have been a reckoning. It's a thing that might have happened, but we don't know. There's no way to tell. And honestly,
reckoning is such a good word.
Yeah. Like I wrote a thing on the apex of the Barry firing, you know, desire of the fan base out there that was, you know, if you want to keep him around, what you need to do is something along these lines. Like, you need to basically convince the players, like, Joe's going to be gone. We still need to finish the season. So, you know, I'm in charge. Here's the guys who are going to implement. Talk to them. Something like that. Maybe not that exact thing, but might have happened. The other thing, though, is, like, the defense hasn't been that much better down the stretch. Like, I feel like a lot of these questions are based on the theory that the Packers drastically improved on defense, like after Christmas or so, or around that time period. But like, this team gave up 30 points to the Panthers, guys. Like, that's a thing that happened, you know, post reckoning. And yeah, they shut down the Vikings, but that Vikings team, like, Jaren Hall is awful. I think if Nick Mullins or Josh Dobbs plays that game instead, they probably score quite a bit more points. And the Buccaneers, tore them apart too. So I don't know where this
not only tore them apart, had the first ever perfect passer rating in
Lambeau Field. So I don't know where this notion is that like everybody was mad at Joe Barry and then all of a sudden this defense drastically improved. That's not a thing that happened. Like they've been good against a Bears team that is atrocious and a Vikings team that was playing their third string quarterback that they clearly don't believe in anymore. So they're still bad at defense. That's still a thing that's a problem with the team.
I believe in my most recent article, I said that they improved from the worst defense in the league to only kind of bad.
Yes, that's probably accurate.
But the one thing they did that you've talked about a few times, at least against the Bears, which that only means so much, is the on third down, they were not giving the big cushion. They were trying to get off the field or give up the first, like give up a big play. They were playing tighter and not giving Fields time.
Yes, they did
rushing five or whatever.
They played a good game. They did against the Bears play a good game. I completely agree. My big problem is that they do it sometimes. Like the Rams, they also played a good game. They played a very similar style of game. I want to if they do it against Dallas, then we'll have more to talk about. But we'll
it's true because the Bears only mean so much.
That's right. All right. Rob Regis, our last Patreon question of the week. Does this team need to add to the wide receiver room given Watson's inability to stay healthy?
I mean, I would love a true deep threat that's not just like Bo Melton.
Right. Bo can run fast, but he's not like a outside burner. It would be nice to have like a Watson light of some kind. That would be good.
Hey, I think MVS is going to be a free agent.
No. Absolutely not. He's cooked. I like MVS. I think he did well for himself, but he's cooked.
Also, I very much like MVS the person.
Yeah.
Like he's a cool dude, and I like his dogs on Instagram, and so I root for him. But, yeah, I don't want him back on the team.
And the thing is, also, like, there's not really a place for another backup wide receiver. Like, ideally, you would want, like, starting Watson, you know? Just a random extra roster space where you could have like a backup guy, like you have kind of Melton and Reed, you know, teamed up. And Wicks is an all around guy. He's not a deep threat either. But I don't really think they need to add to the wide receiver room. They have a ton of depth. They certainly don't need to do it with a veteran. Like you can grab some late round burner and just see if you can plug him in as a, you know, a nine route guy every once in a while. Maybe a guy can return kicks or punts or something too. I don't know. But the wide receiver room, I think, is the last of our worries at the moment. Like, they're fine when they're hurt. They've done great. So, yeah.
You know, Jeff Janis is just, like, retreading tires in Tawas, Michigan.
He's just waiting there for that opportunity to pop up. All right. I think we could probably call it there.
Yeah. Yeah. Screw Blue Sky.
I like Blue Sky, but man, we have 30 Patreon questions. We got to get this done and edit and stuff, and it's already late. So, all right. What do you guys, before we go, first of all, Tim, you want to plug your pod one more time?
Yeah, sure. So I've got a website, Tech Hockey Guide, and then the podcast is Chasing McNaughton. For all of you that aren't really hockey fans at all, I still recommend going back and finding an episode we did in December called Matriarch. We interviewed the 90-some-year-old wife of Michigan Tech legend John McInnes, and had a really good time just talking to her about everything. So that was cool.
Nice. All right. And Matt, you got anything? I know you have the props, of course, which is great.
Yeah, so I continue to write just absolutely unhinged betting content for Every Bag and Company, where during the opening line article this week, I referred to Jerry World as the oil baron retracto dome.
Very nice. All right.
So, but you know, as always, guys, call your best friend, tell him you love him. It's not too late until it actually is. Open your best bottles. Life is short.
Yeah. And before we go, what do you guys think of the game? Think we're winning? Think we're losing?
I think we cover.
All right. What is it, 7.5?
7.5.
Yeah, it's 7.5 now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know if we're going to win, but it should be fun.
Yeah, I actually also on Tally site picked us to cover, but Dallas to win. So I guess we're unanimous there to some extent. All right. As for me, my Shepherd column should be up right now. I am the regular season champion at Tally site, which is where
Welcome to the club, friend.
Yes, all of the SB Nation and various other sports writing outlets force the writers to make picks against the spread, or you can do a whole bunch of different things. I always do it against the spread and the money line every week, and I had the number one performance, so I put no effort into it whatsoever. I'm not good at picking games, but like, there's guys for The Athletic. Mike Florio's on there, so I beat all them at picking games this year, so yay me. Minipod will, of course, be on Friday as per usual when they get to Dallas' tendencies. But yeah, that'll do it. Enjoy the game on, we're on Sunday, right? We're Sunday 4:30.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. I come into the house, go back. Put on a pot of coffee, walk the floors a little while, set your postcard on the table with all the others like it. I start picking through the pile. I check the pictures and the address and the captions and the stamps for signs of any pattern at all. When I come up empty-handed, the feeling almost overwhelms me. I let a few of my defenses fall, a bitter smile. It's not a pretty sight to see. I think about a railroad platform back in 1983, and I remember the train headed south out of Bangkok down towards the water.